How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It is October 22, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are joined today by Romeo Roselli, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. And Romeo, what's going on?
Oh, I'm happy to be on the show. Thanks for having me. Everything's great.
Now, according to my calculations, and I could be wrong, and whenever I'm dealing with math, there's a good chance I'm wrong, I don't think you have been on this show in 5 years.
5 years? Oh, well, you're better than me then, because I don't even remember the last time I was on the show. So I guess it's definitely at least 5 years. But
2008.
2008.
2008, you made an appearance on this show, and a lot of people raved about it. So you've got something to live up to here.
Oh, I'll do my best.
Let's start with, I guess, a rather general question here. What have you been up to since 2008?
So I got to cover 5 years.
That's right. In minutes.
Yeah. So I started working for Equinox Fitness, and I'm one of their tier four coaches now. And I work in a private facility in Equinox in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I've been based out of there teaching fitness classes and as well as one-on-one. Higher-end clientele, obviously, because we're in Greenwich. You know, still work in the indies a couple times a month, and I guess just kind of depends on, you know, who calls me and what have you. And then, you know, being based out of New York City, I've been getting some good opportunities for some, you know, film and television appearances and auditions and that type of thing. So I have my hands in a lot of different things the last 5 years. So it's been quite the good 5 years. And I've also, I guess I should throw this in. I got married. I guess that's kind of important. I did that along the way as well.
You know, what's funny is I went on Google and I typed in Romeo Roselli, and a list of suggestions comes up, as many people are aware. And one of the very first suggestions that came up was Romeo Roselli engaged. In fact, that was the very first thing after your Wikipedia. So was this like a big deal at the time, or what happened that so many people were searching for Romeo Roselli engaged?
I don't know. Well, you know, let's just face it, Brian, I was obviously a hot topic. So when I got engaged, you know, a lot of disappointed people out there.
That is, I hadn't thought of that, but I'm sure that probably you were flooded with emails begging you to reconsider.
There was a lot of women out there that were having some sleepless nights. But I guess part of it was due to the fact that I proposed in Los Angeles, California at the SAG Awards on the red carpet. So that was, you know, I made kind of a spectacle out of it.
Sure.
And it was on, you know, we were featured on CBS, The Insider, and, you know, a lot of paparazzi and that type of thing. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I did it, because, you know, we were on the red carpet. It was the SAG Awards, you know, all the stars were there and we're out. And I'm saying to myself, you know, I want to marry this woman. And what better way to, you know, have a memorable proposal than to do it smack in the middle of a red carpet?
That's true. Very few people can match that. Maybe Daniel Bryan at the top of a mountain with a reality show crew. But other than that, not many.
Yeah, and I didn't have access to any of that stuff, so I only had to go on what I had to work with.
Now, your website is GiovanniRoselli.com, which I can't personally decide what is a better name, actually, for pro wrestling, Romeo Roselli or Giovanni Roselli. You've obviously chosen your real name for this for your website and everything else that you do. A photo here of you that looks like you're doing motivational speaking. And I was looking through your list of acting roles, and it appears, and I want to take a little credit for this, that ever since you appeared on the show in 2008, your career has skyrocketed.
You know what? Come to think of it, ever since, you know, 2008, I was in this small movie called The Wrestler.
Yeah,
Mickey Rourke, and that kind of helped me to put that on the resume. But in all actuality, that was a great opportunity to be a part of that movie and work with Darren Aronofsky, who's such an amazing director. So yeah, I mean, ever since kind of that movie came out, and ever since I got cast for that, you know, things have been moving along really well. And it, you know, it really helps that I'm in New York City and I'm in New York. So, you know, to try to, you know, become an actor and, appear on television and film would be a lot more challenging if I lived in, you know, if I lived back in Louisville, Kentucky when I was in OVW, or
sure,
you know, if I lived just in another state.
Now, it looks like from 2008 through 2009, you got a bunch of roles, and then 2 years of nothing, and then in 2012, it kind of blew up again. Was there a situation during those 2 years? Did you step away from it? Did you, I guess, what happened there that nothing happened?
That's a good good question. What happened was I got engaged and I got married, so that took up, you know, just you know, going through that whole process and, you know, wedding plans and, you know, moving and, you know, life changing. You know, I just, something that, you know, I wanted to focus on. And then what else was it? I had an unfortunate injury.
Mm.
And a lot of the roles I get are obviously stunt oriented, and you know, the television appearances that I've done are very physical, as well as the film appearances that I've done are very physical roles. So when I was out with an injury, that put me out for a good year. I believe that was in 2009, and then I got married in 2010, and that was pretty much the bulk of those years when I really wasn't doing too much. Is, you know, that's when I got promoted to work for Equinox in Greenwich, Connecticut as well. So that was just a whirlwind of things, you know, happening between marriage, new job, moving, injury, recovery from injury, that type of thing. And then as soon as the ring went on my finger and I moved into our new place and, you know, back in the gym, you know, I went back at it and I've had some good success with it.
What was the injury?
I tore my bicep tendon.
Mm, not good.
No.
You weren't back in 8 weeks like John Cena?
No. I took a little more time to make sure I was healing well.
Now, the filmography here on your Wikipedia lists a number of different appearances, but does not include Pants Off, Dance Off.
Hmm. You know, just for the record, too, I would definitely, because I don't even look at a lot of Wikipedia things, because I know, you know, the sources that come from Wikipedia, who knows where they're from.
Sure.
But my IMDb would probably be a little more accurate as to what I've appeared on. So there may be some, if there's anything missing, then hopefully it'll be appearing on IMDb. But you're getting ready to give me a little jab. So go ahead.
No, actually I wasn't. I am honest to God interested. I'm sure I asked you in 2008, but it's been 5 years. I've forgotten all about it. What in God's name was Pants Off, Dance Off?
Well, I mean, come on. What did the heartthrobs do in WWE? So, you know, this show on the Fuse Network, it's kind of like a stupid dancing type of stripping show. And I'm like, you just want me to do what I did on TV just for you guys? Yeah, sure. I'll have some tearaway pants and pull them off and, you know, play a stupid song. And, you know, that was pretty much it.
How about that? Was Antonio involved in this as well?
Antonio was not involved in this. This was something, you know, once again, you know, it filmed in New York. So it was just something that I happened to be in the, I guess, right place at the right time. Looking back, you know, was it something that was life-changing for my career? No. But, you know, looking back at some of the stuff I've done, you know, it kind of naturally brings a smile to my face.
Now, I presume that the personal training obviously is something that you love to do, and obviously you're doing acting here and there as well when something comes along. And pro wrestling, fitness training, acting. I mean, are you happy with where you are in life in the sense that you're doing something that you love, opportunities to come up to do something else that you love, and really it all sort of works together into something that is very fulfilling at the moment?
Yeah, you know, like you said, and like I said, like I have my hands in a lot of different things right now, and it's just very, very happy place that I'm in with, like you said, you know, wrestling will always be in my heart. And I always say that no matter where my life takes me, you know, and I think, you know, as a professional wrestler, most wrestlers will say that, you know, the fitness, you know, training just really kind of took off for me. It's something that's come very naturally to me, but something that I've worked very hard for. You know, I've gone to a lot of workshops and seminars and taken a lot of certifications. You know, I try to be, you know, the most well-rounded fitness coach that I can be, and not just, you know, Joe Trainer who's going to go do a leg workout with you. You know, I'm trying to be the opposite of that guy. You know, that's why I've taken so many certifications and workshops and seminars and that type of thing. And, you know, Equinox has granted me the opportunity to, you know, be featured, you know, on like NBC Today Show and writing fitness articles for all magazines and for their own publications. So it's just, you know, it's not something that I expected to happen, but something that, like I said, has just kind of taken off on its own. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, my determination, you know, to keep my body as fit as I can. Going back to, you know, as my days as a full-time wrestler. So, you know, I'm really, really, you know, enjoying the fitness training. And then I get to teach group fitness classes. So that's kind of the performance in itself. You know, that's kind of Romeo gets to go on stage and, you know, teach a fitness class to a bunch of, you know, hungry, motivated individuals looking to work out. And, you know, the acting thing is something that also has been picking up, slowly, because it's, you know, something that coming from a person who was very shy when I was young, and not a lot of confidence, not a lot of self-confidence, you know, I've realized that wrestling opened me up to the fact that I love just natural entertainment. So why not, you know, try to just take advantage of that fire and that hunger that I have for performing. And right now I'm, you know, not only just doing film and TV, I just did a Shakespeare theater production this past summer, for the entire summer. And, you know, I'm still currently studying Shakespeare. And probably we'll be doing another Shakespeare play next summer. And I'm actually getting into some musical theater, and I'll be in some musical theater productions as early as next year. So it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of fun. You know, it seems like it's kind of all over the place at the same time, but it definitely keeps life interesting.
So are you doing a crash course in singing, or have you been able to carry a tune for most of your life?
I'm able to carry a slight tune. I just kind of search out roles where I don't have to sing solo. So as long as I get to, you know, perform, you know, there's still a lot of theater that requires physical, you know, stunts and stage combat. So then that's where I just thrive. And that's what's, you know, just so fun to me too. And I have not a leg up on a lot of people who do it, but in one respect I do, because for 10 years, what was I doing in wrestling? I was doing stage combat, live theater. Mm-hmm. And this is a lot safer to do it here.
Now, going back to personal training, this is a wrestling and mixed martial arts website, and so obviously everyone listening is a wrestling and mixed martial arts fan. And so they're watching television, and there are all these guys and gals in shape, and so they often have questions. How do I get in shape? They have questions about dieting. And the answers, I think, are pretty obvious. A lot of people just don't like to face the truth, which is you got to train and you got to diet. You got to eat things you don't necessarily like. Or if you're smart about it, you can eat a lot of stuff that you do like, but you can't eat cake every day. You can't, go to McDonald's. I mean, it's hard work. What advice, how would you approach this to somebody that they really want to get in shape? It's going to be hard for them. How do you approach this sort of person? What kind of motivation can you give them, and what kind of advice can you give them to make this perhaps easier?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm going to defer right to my nutrition coach. I'm certified with a company called Precision Nutrition, and the founder's name is John Berardi, and I actually just saw him speak this past Sunday at a life maximization event for Equinox, where we brought him in and a lot of other top fitness professionals from around the country in. And you know, he did this whole speech about how people always ask him, because you know he's the nutrition guy. He goes, "What's the best diet for me?" Right? That's what everybody wants to know. And he's saying, because that's the wrong question to ask, because how could someone who's a vegetarian and do strictly a vegetarian diet and be successful with it be compared to someone who does a meat paleo diet and that person's just as successful? So is there one way? What is the best diet? He pretty much put it like this. The best diet is one that you stick with and the one that you're consistent with. Because you have all these different diets. You have Mediterranean diet, paleo diet, you know, there's books on, you know, eat cake workout for 30 days and you'll lose 20 pounds. And then there's the book that says eat no sugar, you know, and we get all this information that's being thrusted out at us. And pretty much the bottom line was, and with all the research, is whatever you do, you just have to be consistent with it and eat like an adult and think like an adult. And that's just another, you know, common sense, you know, response too. And I know that's kind of cliched, but, you know, you kind of got to think, well, you know, what am I putting into my body? And, you know, when I talk with my clients, you know, one of the things that I always remind them is, you know, for when they're asking me about, you know, what do I do and, you know, what they should do, I say, every time I put something in my body before I do, I think about how it's going to affect my body, how it's going to affect my goals, how it's going to affect, you know, my overall quality of life, and how it's going to affect my health and my heart, you know. And at the end of the day, everybody knows what they, you know, should and shouldn't be eating and what they need to be eating more of and what they need to be eating less of.
Well, let me actually cut you off there and ask you a question real quick. Do you believe that is true? Because I had a buddy who is looking to lose a little bit of weight, and I said, well, first, can you write down everything that you eat in a day and send it to me, and I could kind of take a look at it, and maybe we can go from there. And he sent me this list of food. This is a 31-year-old man, and this list was so preposterous that I thought he had to be making it up. It was like, you know, I had two boxes of macaroni and cheese. I had a quesadilla with 10 slices. Just all of this. It's just like, you can't really, honest to God, believe that this is like good for you, right? Do you kind of run into that, or do you think that people really do deep down know what's good for them and what's not?
I think you've made a great point, and you've kind of called me out. So yeah, I mean, to your point, there's probably many people out there that don't even realize how bad they're eating, you know? And I think that's is that what you're getting at?
I think so. I think people have this idea that, well, the box says low fat, must be healthy.
Well, I don't know if anybody just heard about this recent New York Times article that just came out this past week that actually researched that said Oreos are more addicting than crack and cocaine.
Really?
From a hormonal, biological standpoint, they've done research that has, you know, and the article came out in New York Times. And on top of that, to look at the nutritional you know, ingredients and nutritional components of a serving size of Oreos, which are two Oreos, and technically eight, if you eat eight Oreos, which is probably, I mean, you don't eat just kind of one or two Oreos, but I mean, I guess, you know, depending on who you are, eight Oreos is the, if you eat eight Oreos, it's the entire amount of sugar you should be having in one day. Entire. So if you ate zero sugar, which is pretty much impossible in a industrial world we live in where everything's processed and everything's garbage anyway, but that would give you your entire daily requirement of sugar, which is, you know, a whole other issue with, you know, just like I said, the world we live in today with just processed garbage.
How would you, let's say you have a person come to you and they are in fact addicted to not just Oreos, but they have grown up, they've eaten poorly for their entire adult life, and it's now to the point where this really is not going to be easy, because as you noted, they are in a lot of ways addicted to this food. What is the best way, slow and steady, to break this addiction?
Right. Well, you just said it best. So this becomes psychological coaching more than nutritional coaching. So what you have to do is, and this kind of goes back to John Berardi and Precision Nutrition, only one new practice at a time. And one new practice is ideally done daily. It's easy to understand, and it feels small to the client. So feeling small as in, yeah, I can do that. You know, you want it to be something that, you know, definitely can be accomplished. The research shows that if you change one new thing, and this is all psychology books and research and through fitness, if you change one new thing, you have an 85% chance of success. If you try to change two things, you have a 35% chance of success. If you try to change three things, then you have a 10% chance of success. So for everybody who's saying, okay, so tomorrow I'm going to, you know, take out this, change this, and add this, you got a 1 out of 10 shot of actually making that happen. But if I told you, hey, listen, you don't drink enough water, how about for the next 4 weeks or 2 weeks, depending on the person, we're just going to try to increase your hydration levels, you know, by two glasses of water every day. Is that something that you feel like you can do? Well, yeah, I could do that. So when you wake up in the morning, you can have a glass of water, you know, as opposed to not drinking anything or just drinking coffee. Is that something that you feel like you can do? And then there's a whole scale that goes along to that, you know, at 1 out of 10, 10 being, hell yeah, I can do that, 1 being, no way. If they're any less than an 8, then it's too challenging, and then you need to find something else. So that's kind of my coaching mentality, mindset, and that's kind of where the really good fitness, you know, coaches that I've learned from and that I'm learning from are really going towards now. You know, it's becoming more of a, you know, psychological evaluation, and those studies that I told you before are pretty shocking when you think about it. Is it going to take a long time? Yeah, it's going to take a long time. But if we try to change too many things, we already know that it's not going to be successful. So how about, I'll give you another example. Listen, how about we just start eating something for breakfast? Because you always skip breakfast every day.
That's a big one.
Right? So you skip breakfast every day. So you're coming off of a fasted state where you haven't eaten anything for, you know, 6 to 8 hours. Can we implement some type of breakfast every day? And then that's where you start. And then wait till that becomes a behavior. And then once that becomes a behavior, then you're on to the next one new practice. And that's how people sustain change. The people that don't sustain change are those 10% who are saying,
I'm going to do this. I'm going to add this. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to eat vegetables every day. And then I'm going to do this. You know, those are the ones that fall off the wagon.
So each person, as you noted, is different in terms of how long it takes for each of the small changes to become a habit.
Yeah, you know, and it depends on the person's, you know, lifestyle, depends on where they are, you know, what really matters to the person, you know, how can we measure it, and how can we follow up, you know, and that's another, you know, significant thing that a lot of people don't realize is that if you don't have anything to really, really put against the client in regards to, why are you going to tell a client that to eat only local, organic, you know, grass-fed, all this stuff, when your client is barely making a living and has three kids and can't afford that food? And you're telling them that's the only way. Now, I'm giving you a very specific example, but yeah, is local, organic, grass-fed the best? Overall, generally, well, yeah, kind of, you know, but are you going to give that specific recommendation to someone who can't afford that? That might not be the best recommendation. So as a fitness trainer, as a fitness coach, you have to find the best way for that individual, you know, so that's something that's considered too, because the fitness coaches and the trainers and, you know, the nutritionists that say it's this way, or no way, or this is the golden, you know, holy grail. You know, that's not the world we live in. You know, that's why I go back to, you know, there's all these different type of books that all contraindicate each other.
I read a book on longevity once. I can't remember the name of it, but they had done a bunch of studies. They'd followed some children for, it was some ridiculous amount of time, like 60 years. They started this study and they followed them all the way through 60, 70, 80 years old. And you know, all of these different longevity studies, you know, they're all looking at different things. Do they eat broccoli? Did this person get enough exercise? And strangely enough, at the end of the day, the book concluded that the people that lived the longest, the one thing that they all had in common was they were the most prudent. And that just sort of, you know, everything in their life. They didn't drive too fast. They didn't drive too slow. They didn't eat too much. They didn't eat too little. When you went to the longevity, I guess, seminar or whatever, whatever you would call it, I mean, what are they saying right now in terms of diet is sort of the new information about there about what each person can do to live the longest, healthiest life?
The expression is, you know, health is the new wealth. And, you know, to go back to your question, it's, you know, looking at other factors, you know, outside of how many calories does this thing have? How much protein? How much carbs? How much fat? You know, how about digging even deeper and seeing, you know, food preference, to go back to those vegetarians versus the people who eat meat? What about, does anybody really know, or who really finds out if they have any food intolerances to anything? You know, you hear about gluten sensitivity and that type of thing. How many of us have really gone out and sought out that information and see if you have any food intolerances? You know, and then there's, you know, cultural and religious beliefs too. You know, the way Jewish people eat are very different than the way, you know, Catholic people eat. How about food availability? You know, to go back to my previous statement of, you know, are you giving people realistic, you know, examples of how they can go about living, you know, the best life they can if, you know, they're in a place in their life where, you know, they're barely getting by as it is. And that goes also back to, you know, the budget, and, you know, how much they're willing to spend on the food.
Do you believe that... Oh, go ahead.
you know, the toxins is a huge discussion right now, and it's only starting to, you know, get to the forefront. And a lot of people, you know, they just don't realize the deficiencies they have with, and just by eliminating some toxins, I think the studies are is that I think 78% of us are vitamin D deficient,
mm-hmm.
and we don't even know it. You know,
especially around here, Seattle,
yeah,
100%.
You know, there's so many little things that if you found out, you know, it'd be a lot easier to, you know, to live a long, healthy life. And to go on top of everything else, you know, people who exercise like maniacs and then go sit at their desk for 8 hours a day, what are you really accomplishing if you're not getting up? And, you know, all you're doing is putting, you know, the posture and everything else, the whole other story that's just going to make you, you know, not optimize your health, especially as you get older. And I give this example of when I'm teaching a fitness class, you know, what's natural posture as we get older? And what do you see really old people, how they walk? They're hunched over. So there's something to be said about doing specific movements and doing specific exercises that are going to keep you upright, that are going to strengthen certain muscles. So as you do get older, you know, you have the best quality of life possible.
Is there a, I'm just throwing out any number, is there a percentage of time that you feel is optimum for a person to really be a stickler, in the sense that if you're really trying to watch your diet and you've slowly made changes over maybe 2 years, and now you're really eating healthy and you're taking care of yourself, but hey, Thanksgiving's coming. You're not going to be able to avoid the cake and the turkey and the stuffing. I mean, do you have like a, I mean, do you encourage your clients to have one day a week where they kind of go crazy? Do you tell them, you know, don't schedule it, but if the day comes, don't feel guilty about it. Just kind of get back into the groove. Or do you suggest always do your best and try not to have these days ever?
No, and that's just not realistic. So, you know, I'll never say that. Because that's just not realistic. Because, you know, everyone's going to have a party to go to. Everyone's going to have, you know, everyone's going to have something,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you just have to make the right choices. But I'm also going to talk to my clients about the other factors that are around it. So, okay, so you have a party this Saturday night. Okay. Do we know what's going to be served at the party, number one? Number two, did we have a really good workout week, right? Because if we did, then you could probably get away with, you know, if there was, you know, a little more oil on the chicken or, you know, whatever the situation is. But I will never tell my clients, hey, you have to be good all the time. Because once again, that's not realistic. We're human beings. There's, you know, like I said, I've read psychological studies on this stuff. I've listened to people, you know, give seminars about this stuff. And, you know, that's where we're falling off of. And that's where people start to regress, because everyone's trying to make too many, you know, changes at once. And then finally, okay, so say this person did everything great for a month. They're, at some point, they're just not going to take, they can't take it anymore. And then that's when they splurge. And then they splurge one day, and then one day turns into, you know, 2 days a week, and then before you know it, they're on a downward spiral. So I would never tell my clients. But I would say, listen, we better train our ass off, because that's going to help. And just training our ass off, you're going to affect your metabolism, so your body will be able to take in, you know, the calories and burn them off more efficiently. So that's something that we do have control over. And at the end of the day, you have control of the fork and the spoon that goes into your mouth. So, you know, nothing wrong with some moderation coaching as well.
Let me ask one more fitness question, then we'll do a couple of the wrestling questions here. This has always baffled me. I try to eat really healthy. My wife does as well. And we went to my grandmother's 82nd birthday party, if I recall correctly. And so we're just surrounded by old people. They're all in their 80s. Right. And, you know, my wife and I are looking at the menu, and it's like, man, what do they have here? You know, they got some grilled chicken or whatever. And everybody orders, and 15 minutes later, the food comes, and we've got our healthy food as best we can here in this restaurant. And meanwhile, these old people, beer-battered fish and chips, this one's got a ham sandwich. I mean, just the most horrendous food. And they're all like 80. And I just sort of sat there, and I just kind of... And I've heard different theories, like Lance's theory, Lance Storm, is that, well, you know, they spent many years of their life eating food that wasn't full of sugar and fat and such. And so now here they are in their 80s, they can kind of get away with it a little bit. I don't know what the answer is, but I just remember sitting at that table going, this just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I mean, and I see your point, and I also see Lance's point, and, you know, that's the first thing that comes to mind, really, because... The food industry has gotten worse and worse and worse. And a good example of that, and I'm talking specifically domestically in the United States, is, you know, I'm dealing with the fitness industry. So when I'm about to say I'm talking to my, my coworkers, it's okay. So why do clients go to Europe and they say they're actually eating more or going to Italy and eating pasta, and they're coming back, and they're actually less weight than they were when they got there. And they were like, how is that even possible with the food I was eating over there? Because in Europe and pretty much everywhere outside of the U.S., not everywhere, but you know where I'm going with it, is it's... unprocessed, it's cleaner, it's lighter, it's more local. We're in a very tough time right now with the fitness industry, because from an exercise standpoint, you have all these boot camps, P90X, Insanity, all these high intensity exercises, right? That's the new thing, hardcore, balls to the wall, and we're fatter than ever. As a country, we're more obese than ever. And people are getting injured more than ever. And the medical bills are the highest they've ever been orthopedically, and that's a fact. So how is it that we're exercising harder than ever, but we're fatter than ever, and we're more injured than ever? That just doesn't add up.
And it's the food.
It's everything.
Going back very quickly to your career, we talked a lot about it the last time you were on the show, but I do want to bring this up because you mentioned that when you were a kid, you were very shy. Now, mm-hmm. when you first got into pro wrestling, unless this is incorrect, you started out as Johnny Heartbreaker. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It's pretty... seems like a pretty outlandish, but a pretty, I mean, for a shy kid, you got to have something to go out there as Johnny Heartbreaker. What, how did this shy kid, end up being able to go out in front of people in his underwear as Johnny Heartbreaker? What made that possible?
You know what it was? And that, you know, that ties in directly to my fitness, and that ties in directly to the confidence that being fit and being in shape gave me. And I'm going to say that's the 100% reason why I was able to do that. Because I knew that, one, that I wanted to be a wrestler, and two, if I was going to be a wrestler, that I needed to be in shape. And, you know, three, there was a lot of people that were telling me that, you know, I was crazy and, you know, that it was stupid and, you know, a lot of people that, you know, weren't exactly in my corner. So that fueled me and that motivated me. And then once I caught the bug a little bit, and then once my body started to change, and you know, I started to feel better and look better. You know, it all, you know, kind of came to fruition. And, you know, the Heartbreaker name was just solely because I was a big Shawn Michaels fan. So I put the Heartbreaker at the end of it.
I remember when I was in seventh grade, it was Shirts and Skins basketball, and I had to be on the Skins team. And honest to God, that was the moment where I decided, I gotta lift some weights. Like, there was one defining moment for me. Was there something like that for you, some experience, some, maybe you...
Absolutely.
What was it?
Absolutely. 10th grade, loved basketball, played basketball all the time, went out for the basketball team, and got cut.
Mm.
And then I said to myself, I will never in my life feel this way again, and I will never be unprepared ever again. And that's when the switch just went on, and that's when I really started to get into fitness, really started to read up on it, and really started to just be consistent with an exercise routine. And, you know, that was definitely a defining moment. The second defining moment was I was also a baseball player. And when my baseball coach, you know, when the word got around that, you know, everyone already knew that I loved wrestling in high school. And when word got around that, I was like, yeah, you know, I want to be a wrestler. I want to go to wrestling school when I get out of high school. You know, my high school baseball coach telling me that it was a stupid idea and then I'd never be able to do it. And that was pretty much all I needed. Between those two things, that was really when I flipped the switch on.
Now, despite growing self-confidence and getting in shape and thinking, man, I can do this, you've trained. Do you remember what it was like right before you went through the curtain for the very first time? Did you all of a sudden think, wow, hold on a second, I'm about to go through this curtain? Or were you so excited that it was just like, I'm ready to go?
You know, it's funny because the first curtain I went through, there was no curtain and there was about 8 people in the audience. So I think that kind of helped with
sure.
With my fear, I guess, so to speak. But it was definitely something that I was excited for, more than, oh my God, what am I doing? Because, you know, I went to wrestling school. I felt confident in the basics, and I felt I knew what I was doing. And the shows that I first were on were run by people that I knew, that knew me, that put me with workers that were more experienced, that were able to lead me through the match. So from that point, you know, in a perfect world, that's how you want it to go. So from that perspective, I felt like I was in very good hands throughout the beginning of my career.
Yes, one more question about wrestling, because I've always kind of wondered about this. So you went through the curtain and there were 8 people there. And then obviously when you were in WWE, there were times where you went through the curtain and there were thousands and thousands of people there. Right. And then obviously on the indie scene, you've had, you know, somewhere in the middle, you know, maybe several hundred fans or whatever the number might be. Is there a number that is the most intimidating? And the reason I ask is because I think that a lot of people would presume the bigger the crowd, the more intimidating it is. But I always sort of got the impression that when the crowd reaches a certain size and you can't even really see anybody in particular because there's just so many people there, and it almost doesn't seem like it's real, that it would almost seem like that would be kind of the easiest, actually. Or is it, in your experience, true that the bigger the crowd, the more intimidating it is?
You know what? I got an opportunity to wrestle in Paris, France. And I believe that was in 2008 or 2009. So hey, we could always tie the fact that once I went on your show, my whole life has just taken off.
That's right.
So it was, I believe it was 2008, and I wrestled before a rugby game where they had 80,000 people for a rugby game. And I'm going to go more on the side of what you said in regards to, it was so big, like, I didn't even realize it. Like, I was just, there was people so far away, and, you know, you just look out, and there's just a sea of people. It didn't even hit me that there were so many people there. And it was a great experience to say, you know, I wrestled, you know, in front of 80,000 people. So outside of, you know, working at WrestleMania, that's going to be the, you know, the biggest crowd that I'm ever going to perform in front of. On the flip side of that, I mean, you go wrestle in an indie show and there's only a couple hundred people there. You would hope that there's more, but if there's only a couple hundred people there, it's a smaller crowd and they're quiet, or, you know, or they're just, you know, not that into it for one reason or another. Obviously it's our job to get them into it. You know, that's just as, you know, I guess, intimidating it as you asked, because, you know, who wants to, you know, who wants to wrestle in front of a, you know, a quiet, sitting on their hands type of crowd? There could be, you know, you, the old saying, you know, I'll take 100 crazy people over, you know, 1,000 people who aren't going to, you know, do anything. So really, you know, but that's the art of it. You know, how are you able to, you know, elicit a response from your audience? And that's something that the best are able to do.
I've got two questions here from a friend of yours. I won't mention his name. Maybe you can figure it out. We'll see. This person asks, ask if Antonio Thomas is a good driver.
Oh, God. It's amazing that I'm still alive. I'm going to put it to you like that. It's amazing that Romeo Roselli is still alive after being in a car with Antonio Thomas for so many years. I'm going to leave it at that.
So no specifics as to how exactly he's a poor driver, whether it be speed, lack of respect for law.
I mean, if you have a list, if you just made a list of what constitutes a bad driver, you could just check off every single thing that's on the list, and I'm pretty sure, including, and this doesn't have to do anything with a bad driver, including most likely to drive on empty for as long as possible.
That's not good. That's really not good.
And it's always, whenever it's on empty or even below empty, we got plenty more gas. We're fine. Plenty of gas. And ironically enough, we've never run out of gas.
So you see, he's right.
One of the best Seinfeld episodes was when Kramer did that. We're big Seinfeld people.
Yeah, I never saw it, unfortunately. Now, how about parallel parking? 25 moves to get in there, and hitting both cars in the process.
But the cars that were hit were never his fault.
Of course not. Always, they moved.
You know, ironically enough, you know, all the mistakes that were made with him on the road was because of the other people and never because of him.
What an unlucky guy.
Go figure, right?
And the other question by this mystery person, ask him if he likes cats.
I'm not a big animal person, which is pretty ironic since my wife is a huge animal person and she almost became a veterinarian. She's actually a school teacher.
Really?
She says that if she wasn't a school teacher, she'd probably become a veterinarian. And I've just never been an animal person. See, the thing with cats is that they do something to my eyes, and I want to scratch my eyes out whenever I'm around.
Yes, the cat allergies. That's no good. I'm a cat guy, but I get allergic to cats, and it can be really bad, and that's no good.
Yeah. But just generally, you know, not a big animal person.
You got enough humans to deal with.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, I was never raised with animals too, and I think that has to do with it. Because my mother always said, you know, it's enough with us. Just, it's enough with us and our family. We don't need any other things, you know, walking around us. We're good.
I like how you refer to them not as pets, but as animals.
I guess I do that subconsciously.
I've had days. I've got three cats, and granted, I only wanted two, but the third one was born in our yard, and so, you know, my wife insisted that we adopt it. But believe me, there are days where I'm in this house, and I just kind of feel like there are three wild animals inside my house, and it just kind of seems a little bit weird. So I can understand the reference to animals as opposed to pets.
You know, it's just, and you to hear, like, people are, like, sleeping with their dogs, or just like dogs are on beds, and just like it just doesn't sound something that I want to be a part of.
Sure, sharing your bed with a wild animal is just kind of weird.
Yeah, I'd rather just share a bed with my wife and leave it at that. And you know, there's going to be a, you know, I don't want to be woken up by, you know, a cat sitting on my head, which, I'll be honest, it's happened before, which is why the question was asked.
let's start plugging some stuff here. Obviously, your official website, GiovanniRoselli.com. I want to give you a chance to plug the website, Twitter, projects, dates, whatever you've got. Floor is yours.
Okay. Like we said, it's website's GiovanniRoselli.com. I post all my upcoming appearances on there. I just recently shot a television show for Discovery ID, which is going to be re-airing throughout the next couple months. I shot a film.
You're the main character in this Deadly Affairs on Discovery ID.
Yes, the main character, Bobby Lozano, who was a police officer that ended up murdering his wife. So that was a fun shoot to be a part of.
Fun. It's killing.
And I'm looking forward to the feature film that I shot last year that should be coming out in January, called Jersey Shore Massacre. It will be a limited theatrical release. And then they're still working on logistics of it. Obviously, will be on DVD. And then, you know, working on logistics of, you know, Netflix, Showtime, Cinemax, that type of thing. And that's just going to be a fun, you know, comedy horror film. It's actually got some pretty gruesome scenes in it. So it's definitely appeals to the horror community. But, you know, it's just a bunch of stupid Jersey Shore idiots that get caught up in the, you know, getting chased by a killer. And it's going to be pretty entertaining. It's got some people from the Howard Stern show in it. It's got some good celebrity appearances in it. So it'll be fun. And I was one of the principal characters in that. Trying to think what else. I just appeared, look for me on the MTV show Nikki and Sarah Live. I did a funny little Magic Mike spoof on that from the Magic Mike feature film. So I'm just, you know, keep plugging away. Twitter, I'm always updating that. It's just Giovanni Roselli. And I'm always, you know, I'm always letting everyone know when I'm going to be appearing. Next wrestling appearance will be November 14th up in Antonio's neck of the woods in Boston, Massachusetts. I consistently work for Northeast Wrestling in Connecticut and New York. And, you know, I'm just really, you know, having a great time, you know, still continuing to, you know, wrestle in front of some great Northeast crowds. And if anybody's, you know, in the Connecticut area, wants a good workout, just let me know and come by Equinox. I also work at, you know, a lot of Equinoxes in the New York City area as well. So, you know, you may see me pop up around there as well.
The website is GiovanniRoselli.com. If you can't find it or can't spell it for some reason, you can always Google Romeo Roselli. All that stuff will come up. So check that out. The Twitter account as well. And as he noted, everything is up here. Lots of stuff. The National Geographic Brain Games episode, which was back in June, it premiered. Sci-fi movie Battle Dogs, off-Broadway theater production, which I want to get a ticket for, actually. That sounds awesome. So you can check all those out at the website. And I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. First time in 5 years. Hopefully it's not 5 years before your turn again. But if it is, I predict that because of this show, it's going to be a great 5 years for you there, Romeo.
Well, I'm looking for, maybe we should just keep it at that, because maybe this is, you know, superstitious-wise, maybe we should just wait another 5 years, and who knows what we'll be talking about in another 5 years.
That's true. Maybe I'll tell Doc, give it 5 years, and we'll do it again. See how feedback goes.
That'll be interesting. That'll be interesting.
It was an excellent show, though. I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. And, of course, thanks, everybody, for listening. Back later on tonight, we'll be talking Raw and SmackDown and ROH and everything else. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.